acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 64, Yuletide Greetings. Sunday, December 28th, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, and I'm podcasting from along the Delaware River this morning, Sunday morning. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Ravelry as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. You can find show notes for this episode on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode doesn't have any segment titles because it's completely unscripted and a bit unplanned. I had hoped to get another podcast episode out between Christmas and the new year. And since everyone's on holiday, the house has been very busy and I don't get a lot of quiet time or alone time. So I thought I would take this opportunity to extend my daily walk. And since it's so unseasonably warm here in the Poconos, I can just sit along the river and record my podcast like I do in the warmer months. I thought I'd tell you a little bit about Christmas time at Yin Hu and some things that will be coming up in the new year. So happy holidays, everyone. I hope if you are celebrating in some way or another, you've been able to share with family and friends and have some very good food. Every year, just before Christmas, Samuel and I try to have a weekend date to do something Christmassy. Often we go and walk around to look in shops and do a little bit of Christmas shopping in a quaint little town, like Lambertville or Frenchtown or Clinton. And this year we decided to try the Chris Kindle Market in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Samuel's been there many times in the past, but I have never gone. And we spent a very, very chilly Saturday afternoon there just before Christmas. My expectation of the Chris Kindle Market was that it would be something like a fiber festival, but limited to Christmas items. I just expected a lot of artisans and high quality handmade things. And there were some, but I did not find that the market was very well juried, or juried at all, really. And with a $9 entry fee, I had an expectation that the shopping experience would be a little more to my taste. It makes me really respect a festival like Rhinebeck, where every vendor is selling something of quality and stands behind their product and things are handmade and interesting. I really value that more and more, and I can see why the New York Sheep and Wool Festival is so popular, because I was kind of comparing it to my experience of the Chris Kindle Market. But the one vendor that was sort of the anchor for the entire market was a vendor of handmade wooden toys and decorations for the Christmas holidays. Things like, I don't know the name for them, but the little carousels that whirl around when you light candles under them. There were nutcrackers and there were smoking men. I have wanted one of these for a very long time, and we picked one out and brought it back to Yin Hu. My Smoking Man is about 9 inches tall, beautifully crafted of wood, and he is a shepherd. So he's wearing a hat, and of course he has his pipe. He has a beard that's painted and a wonderfully expressive painted face. He's wearing a real fur pelt over one shoulder, and over the other shoulder is slung a little pouch, and in the back you can see he has a bottle of something to keep him warm on the hillside on those cold winter nights. He has a staff, and at his feet is an adorable little lamb, also made of wood, and stuck with wood shavings, I suppose, to give it a little bit of texture, like locks of wool. It's really, really sweet. I love it. The Smoking Man comes apart at the waist and has a really nice fixture in it so that when you put it back together, it's very snug and secure. And at the top of the bottom part is a little metal dish for a cone of incense. So you light the incense and then you wait until the flame has extinguished. And then you set the cone on the little metal disc and put the top back on. And there's an opening in the Smoking Man's mouth where the smoke comes out. It's magical. I love lighting it and sitting to watch it while we're playing Christmas music or just the fire is going. It's a really nice and special addition to our holiday decorations at Yin Hu and is a special memory for me. So I've been enjoying my Smoking Man, and in the days leading up to Christmas, getting ready for the holiday. I had a day and a half of work, and then at about 2 p.m. on the 23rd, preparations went into full swing for our Christmas Eve open house. Samuel and I host some friends and family for hors d'oeuvres and desserts. And we really collaborated and worked together a lot this year. We made a beautiful lemon cheesecake. The recipe is Meyer Lemon Cheesecake, available on the Food 52 blog. And I highly recommend this cheesecake recipe. I was very, very pleased with the results. I did not buy Meyer lemons, but regular lemons made a wonderful cheesecake. One of the things that the recipe called for was Biscoff cookies, and these are a European cookie. I was not familiar with this cookie, and I had zero hope of finding it at our local supermarket. We had already gone to Wegmans to shop for the more extravagant things that we buy around the holidays and for this open house. And that was before I decided on this cheesecake. I'm sure I could have found Biscoff cookies at Wegmans very easily. But I went to our supermarket and picked out some lemon wafer cookies. I thought they would make a good substitute. And then I just happened to swing around by the holiday section. There's kind of a seasonal section, and there were packets of Biscoff cookies. It was a package of four smaller packages, like snack packages. Perfect for the recipe, and I am so glad I found those because the crust for this cheesecake is delicious. It's very sweet and crunchy and has a sort of like buttery vanilla quality to it. Oh my goodness. Very good. So the cheesecake came out well, and then we had assorted nuts and olives and meats and cheeses, and I made three different appetizer recipes. I made all of these just out of my head, kind of. I had an idea of what I wanted to make, and I just pulled out ingredients and came up with something that pretty much matched my expectations or my wishes. So since I was very busy doing all of the preparations, I didn't write these down, but I think that experienced folks might be able to recreate or probably have already created something similar as an appetizer. I wanted to make something akin to spanakopita, but a little bit less traditional and a little more sweet. So I bought puff pastry sheets and I cut out rounds with a biscuit cutter and I filled the rounds with a mixture of frozen chopped spinach that had been thawed and sauteed until most of the moisture content was removed, and then some ricotta cheese, an egg yolk, salt, nutmeg, and then some very finely diced almonds and golden raisins and a bit of dried pineapple. I put the nuts, raisins, and pineapple into my food processor and just pulsed it until everything was almost like a paste. And I mixed that in and put a little spoonful into the puff pastry, folded it over and brushed it with egg white and baked them in the oven. And they were really nice finger foods, hors d'oeuvres. The second hors d'oeuvre I made was a turkey meatball in a kind of tangy, sweet and sour sauce. For the meatballs, I used ground turkey, an egg yolk, some ketchup, a little bit of salt and pepper. I'm trying to think of everything that went in there. Oh, soy sauce, balsamic vinegar. And then I like to have some kind of dry ingredient to lighten up the density of the meat a little bit. And I will use whatever is on hand for this kind of a thing. And what I had were some rice cakes that Samuel and I purchased, you know, probably in an expectation of healthiness and didn't eat. And we whizzed those up in the food processor and they were light and fluffy and airy. And I added them to the turkey meatballs and it was great. It created a really nice light texture. I baked the meatballs in the oven and then I put a glaze on them. And the glaze was a mixture of a ginger sauce, plum sauce, ketchup, tomato paste, a little more balsamic vinegar, soy sauce, brown sugar. I just kept mixing and heating it up on the stovetop and tasting until I had something that was sort of sweet and tangy and tart. And then I just glazed the meatballs and they were the perfect size for toothpicks. And they went out onto the table as well. And then the final thing I made were small crab cakes. And I use a crab cake recipe. It's sort of an internalization of a crab cake recipe that comes on the back of the can of crab that I buy in the refrigerator section near the fish part of the supermarket. And over the years, I've found that sometimes the recipe appears on the crab and sometimes a different recipe appears on the can of crab. So I've sort of internalized that one with mayonnaise and mustard, and I use some lemon peel powder and grated lemon rind, lemon juice. And again, I used ground up rice cakes as the sort of binder agent and something to lighten the cakes a little bit. I made very small crab cakes and I refrigerated them. That's key for them keeping together. And then just before I put them in the oven, I coated each one with some panko breadcrumbs. And I baked these as well. I figured that was more foolproof than trying to put them in the pan and turn everything over while guests were arriving. And they just browned beautifully, and they were the perfect little hors d'oeuvre. At our Christmas Eve festivities, I had for the first time purchased crackers. They are a British traditional holiday gift item or party favor, I guess you could say. And the ones I bought were reminiscent of birch bark. They were white paper with little gold detail on them that made them look like birch bark. So they were a lot of fun. And what I didn't expect was that folks would actually wear the hats that were inside. These hats looked like crowns. I've seen different kinds of hats come from crackers, and this particular kind looked like crowns. They were sort of cut out with a jagged top and very brightly colored. And throughout the evening, I would look around at my guests, and one or another person would just be wearing their hat. It was really cute. Samuel and I have the tradition of opening our gifts for one another on Christmas Eve. And I was completely gobsmacked by my gifts. One I sort of expected, and the other one I did not expect at all. And in the days since, I have done nothing but play around with my Christmas gifts. I will be able to spin 3 and 4 ply yarn now, with the addition of another Lazy Kate extension for my Louette spinning wheel and 2 additional bobbins. The wheel came with 1 Lazy Kate and 3 bobbins, and that was just fine for the first year or so that I've been using it and just getting to understand spinning and getting to know the wheel. But recently I've been wanting to experiment with some different kinds of yarn structure and bulkier, more sturdy yarns. And I've really wanted to make a traditional three-ply yarn. But with only 3 bobbins, that wasn't possible. So Samuel had actually attempted to purchase this item much earlier in the year, and it was back-ordered. And he received a call letting him know that the item was back in stock and decided to get that for me for Christmas. So that was great. But then I opened a sewing machine. Oh my goodness. I had started talking about wanting to learn some sewing. My sisters both know how to sew, and my mother is an expert seamstress. She's amazing. So I thought that I would maybe go over to my mom's. She just got a new, very amazing sewing machine and is starting to get to know it. I thought I would go over there, maybe work on her old machine, learn some things, have her like supervise me working on a project or something like that. And then when I mentioned this to a few friends, quite a few people said, oh, I have a sewing machine. You could borrow it if you want to. So I thought, oh, that would be good. You know, I could borrow a sewing machine and just use that while I thought about what I really wanted in a sewing machine. But now I have my own. And it's really great because I was not interested in something with a computer or a lot of options. I wanted something very basic that would just work very well so I could learn sewing. And that's what I have. It's a Janome sewing machine. And so far, it's been problem-free. On the day after Christmas, I took it to my mom's house for sewing school, and we spent about 4 hours going through the entire instruction manual. So I learned how the machine works, how to thread it, how to wind a bobbin, some troubleshooting tips for if something goes wrong, what are the steps that you should take to just sort of reboot and figure out what the problem is. Or maybe you won't even figure out what the problem is, but you just sort of eliminate any of the snags by rethreading the machine, pulling the bobbin out, getting that all back together. I put in a button and a buttonhole, and I sewed in a zipper. These things were not things I expected to be able to do my first lesson. I've done a bit of sewing, but it's been a long time, and I was also getting to know this new machine. So my mom just kept, okay, let's do the next thing. Let's do the next thing. And she walked me through pretty much the whole booklet. The only thing that we didn't do very much were some of the fancy stitches and like machine embroidery stuff that's listed at the end of the booklet. So that was great. And then yesterday I spent the major portion of the day rearranging my office and studio space to accommodate sewing. And then I started working on a few simple project bags from a tutorial that I found online for an origami project bag. My first attempts look a little bit lopsided, but they came together. I followed all of the directions, and it probably would help if I were using the correct color thread for the fabric that's exposed, because you can see every inconsistency in my stitching. I don't have a lot of colors of thread yet. But anyway, that really helped me see where my stitching is straight and where it isn't. So it's a good learning tool. And then my mom, knowing that I was getting a sewing machine for the holidays, gave me a book of Heather Ross weekend projects. So all of the patterns for this book come on two gigantic printed sheets that have overlapping patterns and they're color-coded. So I took some tissue paper and I cut out the patterns for four different projects. So later today, I will be attempting a tote bag. I have tote bag fabric and beautiful lining fabric that I received for the holidays. So I'll be giving it a try following this pattern from the book, and I will be sure to let you know how that turns out. Up until that time, I've been working on some knitting projects, and I completed the Advent scarf designed by Zemi, Trisha Weatherston. And this came with a pattern chart and directions a day via email. And I knit about 17 of the 24 days. I decided to make a cowl rather than a long scarf because it was getting pretty long. And also my time started to become more and more limited. So I was able to knit 17 of the designs, and then I just used a pick up and knit idea that I have done on another project to close the two ends of the scarf together to form a cowl, because I did not do a provisional cast on. I had a knitted beginning to the scarf without anything provisional. So I just picked up a stitch from the inside of the cast on edge, and I combined that with the stitch that was live on my needle, and I bound those together. Is that a three needle bind off? I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it made a really nice closure for the cowl, and the cowl is the perfect length to wear, hanging long in front of you, like a almost like a jewelry kind of accessory that doesn't provide a whole lot of warmth, but then you can double it around your neck, and it's nice and warm. The yarn is beautiful. It's a KFI, and it's a blend with a little bit of cashmere. And the colors are very bright. They're not Christmassy at all. They're very bright, and more spring-like almost, but I think nice for around a dreary time of year. And I anticipate that this cowl will become a gift. There are a few family members and people that I see after the holidays, and I will be giving this as a gift to one of those recipients. My friends and family are the most knit-worthy group of individuals on the planet, I think. I gave a lot of handmade gifts this Christmas season, and they were uniformly well-received, and I know they will be cared for, and I also know they will be used. So one of the things I gave is a variety of felted oven mitts or grilling mitts to some of the men on my gift list. And I know that these will be used. It won't be like, oh, it's nice, I don't want to get it dirty. No, no, no. I don't believe in saving things for good. So if it's an oven mitt, if it's a grilling mitt, you use it as a grilling mitt. And if it gets dirty, it gets dirty. Like, that's just the way it is. So it makes me feel so good when I know that gifts I make will be put to use and not saved or set aside for some silly reason. So that was very gratifying to give gifts that I have made throughout the year. And I'm already thinking about gifts for giving next year and starting a little bit of a mental plan for holiday gift giving. I really don't start making anything until the summertime. I don't gift knit really all year long, but it does help me to have a plan and to begin in the summer because I don't like to be rushed and last minute. That really takes the fun out of it for me. So I've already begun making my list, and I've already started thinking about a number of things for next year. So one of them is with the closure of the Bulk Bins cook-along, I've been thinking about a new endeavor for my culinary skill for the upcoming year. So I've decided to host the Power Pantry, and this will be not so much a cook-along as it will be an opportunity to investigate and share ideas for maintaining an effective pantry. And this could be anything from organizing, cleaning out your pantry, the shelf life of items, acquiring new things for your pantry. I'd also like to explore things like, what's the pantry that you need to have for Mexican cooking or Asian foods, for example? If you want to explore baking, what are some of the things that you should have on hand? And maybe other things in the kitchen too, like tools for cooking, that kind of thing. So I'm welcoming suggestions. I've already received quite a few. And I want to thank listeners who are chiming in and sharing their enthusiasm. There's already some interest for doing some kind of a read-along or sharing books, cookbooks and such. That would be very helpful for the development of a pantry. As with the Bulk Bins cook-along, my intention is not to be prescriptive or overbearing, but simply to share and inspire, and also to be a learner. I think that my year with the Bulk Bins cook-along has been enhanced so much by reading the comments and trying the suggestions of listeners who are very experienced in the kitchen or very experienced with a particular type of cooking. And I'm looking forward to more of that. So hashtag Power Pantry will be our hashtag for the year. And I'll be shaping the scope of this endeavor as the year continues. But I think January will be devoted to organizational types of things. Everyone talks about spring cleaning, but when the weather starts to turn warm, the last thing I want to do is spend time cleaning. My preference is to get a lot of cleaning and organization done when I'm stuck inside and there aren't as many options for enjoying the out of doors as there are in the warmer weather. So I find that after the holidays, when I put away Christmas decorations and just have a little more time indoors, is a great time to prioritize and organize and things like that. Maybe you feel that way too, I don't know. It's also a great time to stock up on ingredients and equipment because there are a lot of sales in January for canned goods and different kinds of kitchen equipment and tools. So that could be a good opportunity to stock up on some things that you may be wanting for your kitchen, or to set an agenda for yourself of something you'd like to learn or something you would like to take on. So hashtag Power Pantry and January for organizational. Hashtag Power Pantry, and I look forward to cooking with you in the new year. I'd like to thank everyone who has listened, commented, sent me a personal message, a review, a note over this past year of podcasting. It's just been extraordinary and uplifting and so motivating to know that I'm part of such a supportive community of folks. So thank you. Thank you very much for that. I'm looking forward to another year of growing as a crafter and as a cook and continuing with the podcast and trying to make it better with each episode. I wish you and your friends and family the happiest of Happy New Year's, and I look forward to talking with you again in 2015. Bye-bye.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves are down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, burnt out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine. thing.